This is the National Public Broadcast of W. Dean Mohammed, Muslim American leader. The following lecture, titled Independence and Loyalty, was recorded Sunday, August the 20th, in the year 2000.
Thank you, Imam Donnell Kareem. Brothers and sisters, believers, gathering all, peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. We wish you peace and a beautiful day inside as it is for us outside. It's a beautiful day out there. It's hard to keep people in a small confinement like this. It's so beautiful out there. So I shouldn't talk too long, as my son told me once, little fella. He said, "Daddy, are you going to talk long?" I said, "Well, not too long." I said, "What, you want me to talk for a short while?" He said, "Well, Daddy, say talk long and talk short." I understood it. Yes, we had a beautiful day on the grounds of a new facility at 2979 167th Place. And the rain came, started raining a little bit later, but it was late too, so I didn't want to be holding you that out there longer. And I didn't think it was good either, though the rain was like it was starting to rain. It was going to rain pretty soon. It already started to sprinkle a little bit, I believe. So I wanted to speak to you at that time, and in Marfa, at 2979, 167th place, on loyalty, independence and loyalty, and though this address that I'm about to give is intended for everybody that's in the hearing range of my voice now, and even those that's not in hearing range, because we are recording it, and there are those who promote my audio tapes, sales of my audio tapes, as well as other publications. So it's for a bigger audience than I'm really speaking to right now, or who's hearing me right now. But this has special, if the address has special meaning, at least in some areas, for the followers of the Nation of Islam under the leadership of my father, who passed away in February of 1975. It has special meaning for those people, and I'm one of you. It has very special meaning for me. Some of us miss the most important things that we get in a powerful package. Sometimes the things that reach our mind immediately is what catches us and holds us forever. But some of us, we hear something immediately, and then later something says, "Boom! Wow! That man's saying more than most of us think he's saying." You know? So that's the kind of reaction that many of us had to the message of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we saw a balance, too, in his teachings. We saw that he appeared to be angry on the one hand, but on the other hand, he was very, very peaceful. Very peaceful man. Very peaceful man. A very rational man. So I never saw my father as an angry man. I never saw him that way. he's giving some speeches, and at some point in the speech, he appeared to be angry, and I guess he was angry. But I knew he was one that knew how to get the results he wanted in the audience, too, or from the audience. And sometimes he exaggerated his own excitement, and he exaggerated his own anger just to get the response that he wanted from in the audience or from the audience. Yes, I knew that too. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he was not his own teacher. He could not have become the leader he became had he not been himself taught by a person. And that person was the man he called God in flesh, in person, or God in the flesh, God in the person of W.D. Farrar, or W. Farrar Muhammad. He had more than one name. And that man emphasized to his student, my father, the importance of independence. And I don't believe he came to America to work among us, that is the blacks of Detroit and Chicago and Milwaukee, those that he worked among. I'm talking about my father's teacher. He was right in this city here, speaking all with him. I'm not in Chicago, I'm in Markham. He might have come to Markham, I never heard that he did, but he was in Chicago. And his teacher, Mr. Farrar, actually gave long speeches in Chicago with all the Elijah Muhammad on the platform with him, and in Milwaukee after working in Detroit for a year or more. He told my father that he came to this country July 4th, 1930. We used to have to memorize these things by heart, so I know these things. But he did have a memorized. Yes, we were told that he came July the 4th, 1930. Now, July the 4th is Independence Day. Independence for a new nation that came to be called the United States of America. This nation, this great nation. Independence Day. And we celebrate it every July 4th. We celebrate it with fireworks, with picnicking and outing, fireworks recalling the great victory in war over the old world that didn't want to see this new nation established in this new part of the world that had been discovered 1492. Yes. So Independence Day for the United States of America. And I heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad comment on this one day. In fact, I heard him more than once comment on Independence Day. And when he was preaching once, he commented on Independence Day. He said he came on this, he might have used some bad language too, but I forget right now, I can't recall it, I don't want to recall it, the new time we're in. He said he came on this nation's Independence Day, this world, this government's Independence Day, to interrupt their independence, to break their independence, I believe was his language. My language is interrupt their independence. But I think he said to break their independence. He might say to break through their independence. I can't recall exactly. But to break their independence. I know what he left on my mind was that Mr. Farrar came against the power, authority, and privileges of the government we call the United States of America. Now that's for sure, I know that's what he meant. The because at that time, we were not accorded citizenship rights in this country. But we were asked to go to war, fight for the country, die just like everybody else who had full citizenship rights and privileges. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad found that message tasteful, not distasteful, but tasteful. He liked it. It was sweet in his mouth. Say, I think that here's a man, God himself in the person, have come to us now. Will do our battle for us. And gonna bring this nation down. That's exactly what we were taught, that this nation was gonna be brought down. Yes. And then again, I heard Honorable Elijah Muhammad comment on Independence Day, and it reached me. What the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said of destruction, it reached me, yes, it reached me. And I'm not a violent man, but if bad people are making a lot of people out of misery, miserable, I want to see that stop. But that's not what makes me happy and make me perk up and turn on my energies. It's what somebody says positive to help me be a better person and realize what I want to do positive, in a positive way. I mean, when somebody gives me help for my own soul, help for my own mind, help for my own aspirations, I really give that special attention, not for the moment, but for the moment and hereafter. So the thing that stuck with me of independence for the moment and hereafter, thereafter, and hereafter, still with me. In fact, I'm serving that interest right now. That's why I came out here to speak on this subject. And is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said about our independence. He didn't elaborate, he didn't give any long talk on it. He said he came to give us independence. He came to give us independence. Now, let us look at the word independence. You don't need a whole lot of dictionary and different entries to hear what the dictionary is saying about independence. That's too much for our purpose here this afternoon. For most people, independence means being the boss in some area of their life. Being the boss in some area of their life. Now let's reflect, let's go back a little bit. I mentioned that this country had to fight for its independence, and it won its independence. I should say, although I wasn't living that back there, but I'm so much a part of this now. I feel to say to you, when we fought for our independence, although I didn't live back there, we fought for our independence and we won our independence. And don't think the black man wasn't there now. I think it was Christopher Tubbs who gave the first demonstration against Great Britain. Yes. Yeah, they were fed up. They call it the Boston Tea Party or something like that. Yeah. Instead of delivering it, he started dumping it in the ocean as a protest. Yes. Now, this country was first built by people from the country of their first origin as a nation, and they refused to continue as citizens of that nation because that nation
was not giving them enough freedom and enough independence. Enough independence. They call it Independence Day, the victory. Independence Day was not giving them enough independence. They wanted more independence in their life to realize for themselves the life of their choice. Now this is a people that belonged to another nation that was their nation at the time. They had every right that every other citizen had in that nation or in that part of the world. Now they come to America and they find this new land suitable for them to build a new nation. It's called New Jerusalem, called by different names, the New World, to build this new great nation. They did it with the help of others who were sympathetic. France and others were sympathetic. And they gave them military support, not just moral support, their mouths, but military support as well. And their slaves, some of them asked to fight for the independence of the new world. And their permission was accepted. They fought on the side of the masters. Now here's slaves fighting on the side of the masters. This is not a new thing in history. This has happened in the old world too, where slaves have fought with the nation that enslaved them, or with the nation whose people enslaved them. Yes. So that wasn't a new thing. And then some of them were actually forced to go to war, forced to fight on the side of the master people, on the side of the master class, or the master people, to fight race. Independence. Keep your mind on what we're talking about. Independence. We're not talking about the white man, we're talking about independence. Independence. All right. You know, when you really study your religion, for Christians, Christianity, for Muslims, Islam, Al-Islam, and see what God is giving the believer, offering the believer, inviting the believer to. When you see that through devotion to God, God is establishing a relationship for you with Him. A relationship. A powerful relationship. Powerful relationship. And in both of our religions, no matter how high up you are, how big you are, or how small you are, you have direct access to this great God that created the heavens and earth. You don't have to come to Imam Nebedin Muhammad and say, I need Allah to help me. I'm afraid of Imam Nebedin Muhammad. I ain't Allah, brother. Don't ask that question if you want Allah. Where is Imam Nebedin Muhammad? I need him to help me. I need Allah to help me with my life. You can go directly to Allah yourself. And I saw the Muslim Journal, beautiful, said, what's faster than life? What travels faster than life? Prayer. Prayer. Oh man, did I like that chapter. and this brother I peeked up and just hugged him and kissed him one time anyway. Giving three hugs and one kiss. On his cheek, of course. Or forehead. Right there. So he got something behind that forehead. The brain up there. Good brain. So anyway, I know you liked it too when you saw it. You had to like it. What travels fast in life? Prayer. Before you get the word formed, God got it. Yes. Before you get the word formed, God's got it. But for yourself, you have to form the words and say it out. For your own mind. That's bad. And as far as God being closer to somebody else than he is to somebody, some other person, only because of the purity and good deeds of that person. But if a person whose life is neglected, who's far away from purity, if that person sincerely begin to, in his soul, beg for God, God will come to that person just as quick as you've come to the one who's been pure and righteous all his life. Yes, it's just as quick for that person as it is for the person who's been quick and pure and righteous all his life. Righteous deeds, that's what I mean. That purity and good righteous deeds in his life, doing it. Yes, just as quick. There's a saying of Prophet Muhammad. He says, the one who has done injustice, there is nothing between him and his God, not even a thin veil. Now you know they say Moses spoke to from behind a veil. The prophet said, not even a thin veil. We can get to God, we have freer access to God than whoever that was speaking to Moses from behind the veil had. Yes. Now, independence. When you form that relationship with God that God wants, and you devote yourself to worship God as the authority above all other authorities, then what you're saying is that my boss has a boss over him. That's God. You're saying that my president of these United States, he's got a boss over him. That's God. That's what you're saying. And most people know this. But some of you that's working for self-interest, you work so hard for self-interest, you forget who your boss really is. You'd be shining boots and licking boots and doing other things and brown nosing. And you forget who the real boss is. You forget that person you're trying to impress to get up a little higher yourself has a boss over him or her. So when you form a relationship with the boss, God, you then can have your independence through your worship of God. So God himself created us for independence. That's how come it's in us. And that's how come it drives us. We're not satisfied when somebody asks too much of us. So they're asking me to make them my God. I can't have that. There's a limit to how much I, or the president, or the pope, or anybody will command your life. There's a limit. You're not going to let them command your life except but up to a certain limit. And then you're going to say, no. Hey, what are you trying to do? What are you asking of me? Now, what is that rebelling against them? The same thing that turned Jonah around and made him go back pick up his interest. Same thing that made Moses stand up to Pharaoh. Same thing that made Abraham tell Pharaoh, the God that created me will guide me. Not you, Pharaoh. Yes, the same thing. There is, Muhammad put it this way, I think he put it, yes, yes, I recall, peace be upon you, Prophet Muhammad. He said, every landowner holder or farmer, he has a special piece of land in his land. He has land, his whole farm is his, but he has a special little piece of that farm that he gives very special and personal attention to himself. Says, he said, likewise for God. He says, God, he has a area that's prohibited to all but to himself. And that's the core of every person's soul. The core of every person's soul belongs to nobody but God. He doesn't want me in there talking and telling you what to do, and he doesn't want the President of the United States in there talking and telling you what to do. He wants no authority in there but him talking and telling you what to do. In the core of your soul, for want of a better word, in the most important, most sacred area of your soul, that's what I mean by core, the core, the ORE of your soul. Yes. So that's where your independence is. And you were born with that soul and with that independence. And it's that special privacy, that sacred privacy, that makes you tell somebody sometimes, you won't listen to anything that I have to say. I'm entitled to an opinion too. You assert your rights to be heard. You have a right to be heard too. Now, when we were enslaved, or brought over here captives on ships or whatever ships, yes, our authority in our own life was taken away from us. Not part of it, all of it. All of it. We ourselves were property, so we couldn't own anything. Everything we had belonged to our master, even us. If you had clothing, the clothing and you belonged to your master. If you had sleeping quarters, the sleeping quarters and you belonged to your master. Whatever you had, that and you belonged was the property of your master. Until you sold it to another master or until you died. But no matter how much a man possess another human being, or a woman, because you got a lot of women slave masters that's not in the book, not even in history at all. A lot of women slave masters. I know because I had one that attempted to enslave me. Well, now I got to fight that thing to get back on track. It's got a mighty heap of something in my life. All right, I think I got her going now. She's moving on out again. All right, so this independence in the core of your being was put there by God. And then God frees you, even from him as the authority. Isn't this wonderful? God frees you even from him as an authority. He creates you, and then just as a baby is born, and can't remember anything about his life in the womb. Born and can't remember any of the pain that he suffered being brought out by the doctor or by the nurse, the vet nurse. Can't remember it. Can't recall any of that. Likewise, the God that created us, he made it impossible for us to recall that he was the one who created us. So we come into the world and we don't know who created us until somebody help us get on the path. Or until trouble in the world drive us to ask some questions. Yes. We don't have to have somebody help us all the time. Enough misery or enough joy will make you wonder, how come I'm getting all of this misery? Or how come I'm getting all of this joy? And it makes you turn to the dark. Because you know it's not in the light. The answer is not in the light. You haven't seen it a long time ago if it was in the light. So you turn to the dark of your own mind. And you begin to search the midnight of your own mind for that dark. For whatever's responsible for that. You don't even call it God. You just want to know what's responsible for this. Why am I like this? Why am I made like this? Yes. So it is so wonderful that this God creates us and then frees us even from himself. He's not even in your life as your boss. But you got something else in your life. It's an invisible boss. It's a hidden boss. It's your own self. But it's in the sacred core of your being. And it every now and then will speak to you. See, when you're going to do something with your life? It will speak to you. When are you going to leave that wall that has brought you down to zero? You're less than a dog because of you following around and following that woman around and doing whatever she asked you to do. The captain told me once, he said, a brother came to him to confess. And the brother said, "Captain," I can't tell you either one of their days. He said, "Captain, I want to come to the temple. I want to come to the fruit. I want to be a good temple. But my wife, see, she just put the hands on me, and I'm afraid of her. Really, I'm afraid. I'm afraid I'll need her. And she tell me that I can't come out. And I can't come out, but yeah." Captain said he decided to talk to that sister and then both of them together. And that sister said, "Yeah, he's telling you who his God is, but I know who his God is." He stood up to the captain. And they had a little hot argument, and the sister took him on right home. I can't get it the full conversation. It's escalated in the car. Well, anyway, even that brother, he kept enough hell. That independent self that God made to be independent of other bosses, but only under one boss, God, will speak out and tell that woman, "No, it's the end of this. I ain't taking this anymore. I got to have some respect for myself." Walk out the door and never look back. powerful core we have in our being. Powerful core. God created that for him. And that's that sacred peace or area in the land. That's the sanctuary for God. Yes. That's your independence. Your independence is there. That's what drives men to do what many, many great men of religion, of politics and government did. Turn from the ways, established ways of their world at the time, because they can't believe in the core of their being that the human being was created for such a taxing, punishing life. So they turned from it. We were slaves, property of slave masters. But the slave master couldn't boss that sacred piece of land inside of our being that was created for our independence to worship God above all authority, and was created for our own self-respect. They can't command that area. Bilal, just one of many slaves. We could come much closer to ourselves in time. Rosa Parks. She didn't know whether she was going to be lynched, killed or not. But she stood up because something in her core said, time out for this. They put her in jail. They arrested her and put her in jail. But she stood up. We, as a people, were stripped of all of our independence except the sacred self, hidden and unconscious in the soul of our being. And something had to happen to wake that self up. That sacred, hidden self in the core of our being. Mr. Farrar's teachings were so powerful and so different that for many who could not have that sacred self awakened, the teachings of the Nation of Islam was powerful enough to awake that sacred self. Awake it to its responsibility. Say, I'm somebody. And Reverend Jesse Jackson preached into our ears, I'm somebody. He didn't tell us that first. For many of us, that sacred self that was sleeping in the core of our being, like Jonah was sleeping in the hull of the ship, just finally realized that, hey, this ain't me. I have to become myself. Independence, independence. The most precious independence is this independence that I've been speaking to you on for a good little while now. That's the most precious independence. That's the independence that made possible the independence of the New World, the United States of America, from the old world, from Britain, England. That's the independence. If that hadn't been burning and speaking and burning in the founding fathers and in those that came on the Mayflower, etc., there would not have been a call for any new independence. Those people would have went on forever satisfied to serve the old world and to serve their old country. They would have been nothing but colonies forever for the old world, for the old country. Yes. think the term Islam, the religious Islam, is your biggest calling. Ah, I shook your head. That's not your biggest calling. Your biggest calling is your independence. So you be free to give due respect to your maker and due respect to yourself. It didn't have to be Islam. It could have been some other religion or some other ideology. But thank God it was Islam. For me, I thank God it was Islam. Because I believe in my soul that my foreparents were Muslims on the continent of Africa. They were not heathens. They were not worshippers of idols. They were not animists. They didn't worship life. And they were not Christians. They did not worship Jesus Christ. That's what I believe firmly in my soul. And I believe my father descended from those people. And I descended from those people. So I thank God he has rewarded me, has given me back what was taken from my father. And that is their religion when they were in Africa. He has given it back to me. Before, I was comfortable with Islam. It wasn't Islam driving me to want to know God better. It wasn't Islam driving me to want to know and understand my Father better. It was not Islam driving me to want to know Scripture better. The Bible, the Christian's thinking, their thought, their religious thought. It was not Islam. God knows it was never Islam. It was my own curiosity. In the core of my being, I wanted to have these questions answered. I couldn't live with this darkness. I had to see the light. And I didn't know if the light was going to be Islam or the light was going to be something else. At one point, I said, these communists sound better than these religious folks to me. I read where the communist said religion is the opium for the common people, or the opium, the dope for the masses of people, meaning the common people, not educated that well, and have no class, no high status in the society. I said to myself, he's right. That's exactly what I said as a young man and a young minister at that time. I said, these communists are right. I didn't tell you that. I knew better than do that. I don't believe Muhammad would ship me out before I was shipped out. But I said to myself, they make much more sense. Because that's what I saw it as. All that religion. I'm in my house, and Father didn't allow us to even have a radio when I was a young boy. We couldn't have a radio. That's a fact. We couldn't have a radio. It was against the law of the Nation of Islam to have a radio in your house. We could not have a radio. But on Sunday morning, man, those church people were so loud. I'm in the house, no radio. And I hear the Christian church sermon going on just like they in my house, so loud. Window down, new putty been put on the bed, filled the cracks. Still blasting in the house there. Jesus, Lord of Jesus, full of just jumping and jumping and jumping. Got the house shaking a little bit there so loud. And I know what was in that house. I know the family was in that house. I know how they live. And I walk out of that house, 5308 South Wabash, walk out of that house and go on the street and walk 2 blocks over to State Street. And there I see a church on almost every corner. And between the blocks, you got about 2 or 3 churches between the blocks. And you got just as many liquor stores. And you got bums and wine heads hanging around all on outside the liquor stores. And going to the church when the church door is open. So you can see how I bought that the communist charge that religion is the opium of the masses, the dope for the masses. Yes, I bought it. I said, "Yeah, right. That's all it is. It's hypnotic, just like a drug, just like wine or drug. It's hypnotic. It makes them forget their condition, and makes them forget their responsibility." I saw it acting on people just like a drug. Yeah. Now we know all churches weren't cheap like that and irresponsible like that. We know there was a few first-class churches that were doing a good job to keep their members conscious and living a good life. But most of them didn't. They weren't. But look here. Even the worst church with the most ignorant preacher, even that church was telling the members not to sin. To live a godly life, not to sin. But the people were so miserable, so poor, suffering so many things, mostly bad material condition in their life. They were suffering, and poor, and suffering so much that the powerful psychology of the church to make them feel good, the lively music, the happy singing, sent them back home not conscious of their responsibility to do something about their life. So though he told them, live righteous, obey God, don't sin, sin is death, they couldn't hear that, especially after the music and after the singing. They just felt good. Just like you giving a man wine and he's getting high. After a while he's so high, he got another spirit in him. Hey, man, come on, man. Come on over here. Give me your hand. Let me hug you, man. I ain't hugged you. You know you my buddy, man. You my buddy. Now he's high now. And you telling him, you told him before he got that high, you told him, sin is death. And remembered after that. He doesn't remember sin is death. If you had told him the worst sin is not drinking, the worst sin is not swearing, saying MF every two or three words in your language. He said the worst sin is you not respecting your human life. If the preacher had told them that, I think they would have been able to drink his wine and get sober. And then after they sobered up, they would have went to work on their responsibility. But the preacher didn't tell them that. This independence that we're given is no small independence. It's a big independence. Is given in the Bible in Genesis. It says, and God created the man and put him in the garden. And the garden was a paradise. It means just beautiful, pleasant, all good. God created the man and put him in the garden. And the garden is understood to be or to mean the existence in this world. That this world, before sin comes into play, was made to be a garden of paradise for human life. Now we know if we just can get the things out of the way that's not right, this world will be a paradise. As it was in the beginning, the Eden, the Garden of Eden. Paradise. So God says he created the man and put him in the garden, and his wife, of course. And he charged the man to attend the garden. So here the man is given a big responsibility. And if we interpret it the way learned students of theology or learned students of scripture interpret it, that it means firstly my own soul, the garden of my own life, and secondly the garden outside the external world. If we interpret it that way, then we see that God is giving the human being that he created a great independence and a great responsibility. Independence to cultivate his own soul, and independence to utilize what's outside of himself, of this world, as God says in our Quran, in our holy book, and in the Bible, if you, I get another, in different words I could give you. Whatever's in the skies and whatever is in this earth, God has placed it at your service for you to utilize it to make your life richer and better. If we accept then that that's the responsibility that God created every human being for, male and female, every human being for, male and female. Oh, no, it's for the male, the Khalifa. Well, you think that. Adam was the first Khalifa. And Adam was a man, yes. But Adam was once existing in one soul. And that soul was called male and female. All right? And God, who created that one soul, made it male and female, he caused the separation and created the first father and the first mother, the first mother and the first father, and brought from them all the men and women on this earth. So we are talking about Adam. And Genesis says what the Quran interprets. Genesis says, and he made them male and female.